You know, and there are too many intelligent, educated people who know that that's a liquidation. That's not a business.
Also Wolfgang hat, ja.
I think it's very encouraging when you, what you just said, that we don't need them.
We don't need them.
I think the most important thing is when I imagine, I have a dream, I may say it like this, when the people just take off the mask, when they just open their shops, when they just go on doing what they always did, those people would stand there with open mouth, wouldn't understand, they would no longer be important. We could just go on living as we did before. We have to change a lot of things.
Yes.
But we could do this in a democratic way, and if we have some time to do it, we have to change things. We have to hinder them to do such things happen again. So the decentralization of money, I think, is very important.
Yes.
The decentralization of health is very important.
Yes.
There are many things we can arrange in a regional perspective, and that. If you have it in a regional perspective, this is just important for democracy, because democracy only functions when there is
right.
transparency.
Right.
When you understand what's happening, when you can go to the one who makes a failure and say, hey, stop with this. This is my responsibility. It's our responsibility. Stop this. But this is not possible if the system is too big.
Right.
You don't understand.
So let me bring up three points, because I agree with everything you just said, and you're at the heart of the matter. The first thing is, the good news is if you look at how the planet and the economy works, their system is destroying the economy, and there's plenty for everybody if we run things in a civilized way. So there's no reason why poverty is not necessary.
No.
So there are solutions. There are many different models and systems that can work. But they can't work without the rule of law, and they can't work if you put psychopaths in charge.
Yeah.
So, you know, I never want to have a conversation about, you know, socialism versus capitalism, because if you have good leadership in a place and you have a consensus on what model you want to use, the thousands of models that'll work. So,
that's right.
But the third thing, and this is the unanswered question that I don't know, and this is our risk that we have to deal with. It is clear the people doing this are building a multiplanetary civilization. They've put fantastic amounts of money, I believe, into investing in space and an underground infrastructure to facilitate what they want to do in space. The trillions of dollars that have gone missing through the financial coup have gone somewhere. And the question is, where are they going and why are they going? Now, there are millions of theories. I have no idea what's true. But the reality is, our planet is run by physical force, and that physical force ultimately is driven by who controls in space. And so if you look at the invisible technologies that can be delivered from space, you know, the weaponry, it's very, very powerful. And so if they are few and we are many, but if we organize and defy whoever it is who controls space, we need to be able to deal with that.
You're talking about 5G being used as a means of, for example, controlling us through whatever is being vaccinated, something like that.
It's not just control, but the ability to use electromagnetic weapons to drive your car off the highway or mm-hmm. blow your car up or mm-hmm. use the rod of God to blow up your village mm-hmm. or engage in, you know, so now I get into an area of speculation, which is outside my area of expertise, mm-hmm. but I'll give you a perfect example. And I'd like permission to tell a little bit of a long story, just because mm-hmm. I think examples help. Is that okay?
Sure.
Okay. So in 2007, I was helping a client who wanted to buy a world bond fund. And I don't like most world bond funds, so it was a long search. And I found two world bond funds from a very good sponsor. And one of them had 15% of their money in Indonesian sovereign bonds. No, it must have been earlier, because it was 2004. It's somewhere in there. And you'll know soon when it was. Anyway, so we found this world bond fund, and he made a very large investment because he wanted to buy something and just put it away, get the yield, not worry. very shortly after he made the investment, the fund dropped 15% overnight for no reason that we could figure. There were no change in interest rates. There was no bad news about the sponsor, about the fund, nothing. And there was massive insider trading. And if you looked at the trading that was going on, I've never seen anything like it. I've been an investment banker for decades. I've dealt with billions and hundreds of billions of dollars of bonds. I was floored. I was getting on the phone, talking to the sponsor, trying to find out what in the world was going on. No answers, complete stonewall. A week later, the tsunami in Indonesia happens. And I realized they knew. They knew there was going to be a tsunami more than a week ahead of time. Now, you know, and I sat down and I said, how do you, and then the patterns of disaster capitalism that hit in Indonesia, you know, right after the tsunami hit were, you know, it was clearly there was either somebody was anticipating it and doing it at active war, or somebody was taking tremendous advantage of what had happened. Now, you know, that brings up the question of how many of these natural disasters are weapons versus natural disasters. And I don't know. But whoever has the power to do something like that, you know, we're up against people who use significant amounts of force, and they use invisible weaponry, and they do a lot from space. And so, you know, if you look at why a prime minister would do something that is in the interest of the central banks and against his own people, it's more often than not, I believe, because he's in a variety of different squeezes, and one of them relates to this kind of weaponry. Huh. So I would just say the good news is the wealth potential is phenomenal. The bad news is we're on a planet that is controlled by force, and we need to face, you know, my pastor used to always say, if we can face it, God can fix it. We have to understand the physical force that we're up against.
Okay, let me translate that. One question, however, what do you think about the tsunami? I mean, there's two ways of explaining this. I mean, not the tsunami, but the tsunami. Do you think it was triggered by someone, or do you think there was insider trading because somebody had the means through whatever technology is up there in space to foresee this?
It had to be one or the other. I've had people who tell me they can anticipate an earthquake. Mm-hmm. You know, they can predict an earthquake, you know, fairly far into the future. So I'm assuming it could have been either. Mm-hmm. Given the patterns I've seen that have supported and protected the dollar, I'm convinced that some of these natural disasters are being induced. Mm-hmm. And that is one of the great powers behind the dollar system.
Okay. Also, Wolfgang hatte eben nochmal gefragt, dass er das Gefühl hatte, dass über die letzten Jahre, das ist dann von Frau Austin Fitz präzisiert worden, über die letzten 30 bis 40 Jahre ist das tatsächlich so gelaufen, Kritiker des Systems, die eigentlich in der Lage wären, es zu durchschauen, weggekauft wurden. Dass man einfach nur Geld gedruckt hat, Money Printing wie verrückt, und jedem, der als Kritiker hätte gefährlich werden können, genug Geld gegeben hat, damit er die Fronten wechselt. Sie sagt aber auch, dass gerade in letzter Zeit auffällig ist, vorher war es so, dass immer wieder Allies, also Weggefährten, die Unterstützer waren, praktisch weggekauft waren. Also wenn einer drei Kinder hat und irgendwie eine gute Ausbildung hat und dann wird ihm ein Job in Harvard angeboten für viel Geld, dann wird er das machen, wenn er sich dann sicher fühlt. Sie sagt, das hat sich aber jetzt geändert, weil immer mehr ihrer Freunde gemerkt haben, dass es Dinge gibt, die man nicht kaufen kann. Und das scheint jetzt diese Situation zu sein, in der wir uns befinden, zumindest nach ihrer Einschätzung, dass immer mehr Menschen merken, dass das, worum es wirklich geht, das Menschsein ist und dass die Dinge, die hier mit viel, viel Geld gekauft werden, eben teilweise nicht das ersetzen können, was ansonsten gekauft, was man eben nicht kaufen kann. Wichtig ist, glaube ich, noch, dass sie mehrfach darauf hingewiesen hat, dass wir uns in einer Transition Period befinden zwischen dem alten System, wo man noch versucht, das alte am Laufen zu halten, damit wir uns in Sicherheit wiegen, aber das neue System, was dann nur elektronisch oder elektrisch läuft, wo man uns dann eben Geld zuteilen will, dass dieses System noch nicht installiert ist. Und in der Zwischenzeit wird nach ihrer Einschätzung läuft es so, dass mit sehr viel Geld der produktive Teil der Wirtschaft gekauft wird. Irgendwann wird dann das Gelddrucken beendet werden und dann kann man mit dem Geld, was man vorher für sein Geschäft bekommen hat, das werden viele Leute mit Erschrecken feststellen, leider gar nichts mehr anfangen. Sie hat aber außerdem einen positiven Outlook, beziehungsweise erst hat sie noch ein Beispiel dafür genannt, einen positiven Outlook. Sie sagt, das System, was wir jetzt haben, das zerstört die Wirtschaft. Das System, was wir jetzt haben, brauchen wir aber auch gar nicht. Und wenn das klar ist, dass die Leute, die Geld drucken, um andere Leute aufzukaufen, völlig irrelevant sind, sondern im Gegenteil gefährlich sind für uns und für die Wirtschaft gefährlich sind. Wenn das klar ist, dann haben wir den ersten Schritt, um aus dieser Nummer rauszukommen. Auf der anderen Seite sagt sie aber auch, muss man sich darüber im Klaren sein, dass die Gegenseite über sehr viele Möglichkeiten wegen des vielen Geldes, was hier uns letzten Endes geklaut worden ist, Trillions of Dollars sind geklaut worden, im Rahmen der Finanzkrise zum Beispiel, die sie als erstes betrachtet hat, mit diesem Geld ist irgendwas gemacht worden. Und sie sagt, da bestehen insbesondere Möglichkeiten über wer den Weltraum beherrscht. Der kann von oben mit irgendwelchen Technologien auch Dinge bewirken, zum Beispiel Erdbeben vorhersehen oder Erdbeben sogar verursachen. Sie sagt aber auch selber mehrfach, das ist jetzt Spekulation. Das ist aber ihr Gefühl und das, was sie gesehen hat in ihrer politischen Karriere, bestätigt sie darin. Also, um es nochmal zusammenzufassen, es ist so, dass immer mehr Leute merken, dass irgendwas nicht stimmt und immer mehr Leute merken, dass die Meinung, dass man mit Geld alles bezahlen kann, falsch ist, weil man eben das, was uns jetzt gerade fehlt, nicht mit Geld bezahlen kann. Wir müssen andererseits aufpassen, dass wir uns darüber im Klaren sind, dass die Gegenseite, die zwar nicht aus sehr vielen Leuten besteht, aber die über sehr viele Möglichkeiten verfügen, dass diese Gegenseite nicht unterschätzt werden darf. Trotzdem sagt sie, wenn wir, die wir ja die Mehrheit sind, vermutlich auch die Klügeren sind, wenn wir uns verbünden und gemeinsam an dieser Sache arbeiten, dann wird es klappen. So I gave them the positive outlook that you just ended with. On the one hand, it's more and more people are beginning to realize that money can't buy everything, in particular not what people really want. And on the other hand, we have to be aware of the fact that the other side is very powerful, that they have lots of means, in particular when they control space. And right.
So let me bring up something this year. So in 2021, here's where one of the places that the rubber will meet the road, and that is taxes. Mm-hmm. Because we have private owners of the central banks taking over and running the government policies in a way that is not in our interest and is not in the interest of all living things. On the other hand, we're financing them. We're financing them with our retirement savings. We're financing, many of us where we bank are financing them, but we're definitely financing them with our taxes. Now, we cannot afford to pay taxes to finance a government that uses that money illegally and in ways that harm us. And so the place where the debate between central bankers that are very expensive and we don't need and us will occur in the tax system, because they want the taxes, even though they're spending the money outside the laws of our democracies. And so, as a legal matter, and this is really a legal matter, what are the vehicles by which citizens can organize to assert the equivalent of a citizen's arrest over the money? Because what's important for our tax money is that it is spent in accordance with the law, and it is spent in the ways that we as a democratic people have determined it should be spent. Mm-hmm. So how do we make sure that our tax dollar flows within the law and for the purposes that have been designated by us as a group of citizens under a democracy? So how do we return our tax proceeds to the rule of law? And to me, that's one of the most important legal questions that we face in 2021.
To me,
if we don't speak about, if we don't speak about legal questions, if we speak about money, why do they need taxes if they can print as much money as they want?
When they print as much money as they want, they debase the currency. And the debasement of the currency can can make it harder for them to do what they want to do. And it's it's very difficult to describe the extent of their greed. So part of this is control. And part of this is just simply control. And you're trying to get 8 billion people to organize and function in a way that gives you energy and gets them to do what you want them to do. So, for example, when I used to operate at the top of Wall Street or Washington, the conversation was never, how do we go to Rome? It's how do we get everybody making money going to Rome? Because then they'll take us to Rome. Mm-hmm. And many of the financial incentive systems are organized. So they want to build a digital control system. And so the first step is, how do we get all the freedom fighters and software developers building our system for us? Well, we'll do this thing with Bitcoin and crypto, and we'll make it fashionable and put a lot of young guys in front, and we'll get them to build our prison system for us.
Yeah, but that again boils down to what we have to do is we need transparency. We need to educate people about what's really going on so that the really brilliant types will not move to the other side and do and in effect destroy themselves, because that's what it ends up with.
Right.
But
right.
Rather, so, yeah.
Right. So you want people to build, you want people to create wealth by building wealth as opposed to helping anybody liquidate them. Mm-hmm. So for example, the critical issue on digital systems is, how do we create digital systems where we have enough grassroots encryption to make them work for us? So one of my favorite reforms that I ever heard, I don't know if you've had Bill Binney on yet, but Bill Binney said, what we need to do is get all the homeschoolers and all the schools we can to have curriculum on encryption. Mm-hmm. And he said, if every community is creating their own homegrown encryption systems and constantly changing them, he said, it'll drive them crazy. They won't be able to deal with that. Now, I've had other people tell me quantum computing can deal with that. But I happen to believe, you know, if there is a way to create decentralized encryption, that's part of creating decentralized money. Mm-hmm. The best decentralized currency systems are systems that can operate both digitally and in physical reality. So, for example, you know, we all have local coins. Many of us have gold and silver. Just do it. You don't need to start an organization. Just start using all your coins. Mm-hmm. And that's a system, ideally, that could operate out of, you know, in physical reality and digital reality if you did it right, particularly if you had homegrown encryption. Mm-hmm. So if our ideal systems are systems that circulate currency and equity investment, you know, with our encryption on a decentralized basis in ways which are both physical and digital.
Mm-hmm. And what's the difference now between like using cash and using the coins? Is there something specific to that, or did you mean cash?
Cash is fine. The only challenge with cash is if you look at how fast they're printing money to, you know, hand out to all the LBO guys, the currency's being debased. So I would encourage you, take a look at a website called the Chapwood Index. The Chapwood Index is by an investment advisor in the United States who's trying to track the increase in cost of the most basic household goods. And what it shows is real inflation in the United States, depending on where you live, has been running at 8 to 14% over the last decade. That's debasement of the currency. So by printing the money, our savings is being debased. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're on the insider and you're just getting the money, it's no problem. You know, part of the problem is the debasement of currency. The other problem that must be addressed is the usury laws. Mm-hmm. Because right now, the New York Fed banks are borrowing at 1% or less. The average credit card in the United States charges 16 to 17%. And if you lose your job because of Corona, you know, the next thing you know, you get a letter from your bank saying you have to pay 30%. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So it's that difference. So if I'm getting printed money, then I can deal with the debasement of the currency and the explosion of the cost of goods. But if I'm not, I'm squeezed. Mm-hmm.
And the point with these, you know, the ones who are basically sucking the money out of the economy is they have no problems with the devaluation of the currency because they have all assets. They have the land, the houses, the plants and all that.
Plus they have control over the new currency that they're trying to invent, right?
Right, but they're just printing money and giving it to their friends. I'm grossly oversimplifying, but to me it's they're printing money and giving it to their friends. KKR, one of the largest private equity firms. Mm-hmm. So if you read the Dylan Reed story, you'll read a little bit about KKR. But KKR just announced they're going to issue an IPO to raise $1 billion of a blind pool. Mm-hmm. Now, that means people are going to buy the stock not knowing what's going to happen to the money and where it's going to go. Mm-hmm. And that's because you're talking about one of the companies best positioned to take advantage of the disaster capitalism.
Okay. Okay. Let me translate this again. Catherine Austin Fitz sagt, in 2021 wird das größte Problem sein, zu erkennen, dass die Zentralbanken, und das gilt nicht nur für die amerikanischen, die werden von privaten, die gehört privaten Leuten, die Zentralbank, dass die uns hier aussaugen. Wir bezahlen die mit unseren Steuern. Das können wir uns nicht leisten, sagt sie. Deswegen brauchen wir die Rule of Law. Wir brauchen rechtsstaatliche Möglichkeiten, um wieder für eine saubere Wirtschaft, die nicht mehr. What do you think, by the way? How much of the economy is dominated by or of the financial industry is dominated by this criminal part? Is that 50% or less?
So. If you look at who's managing whoever is managing the central banking system mm-hmm. and the related control of the treasury functions, they're controlling both the overt and covert side of the economy. Uh-huh. Currently, the organized crime globally is said to be the equivalent of the GDP of Germany. I believe it's bigger because I believe that doesn't include a lot of the financial fraud. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, we're talking about a portion of the economy that's been growing steadily since 47 and 49. If you read the Dylan Reed story, what I try and explain is the legal structures that were put into place to build the secret part of the economy, starting with the black budget and the hidden system of finance. And that portion of the economy, because it's not subject to regulations and taxes like the overt, has grown and grown and grown and pretty much bought up control. But they control both sides.
They control both sides. And that side of the story, the criminal side of the story, is probably at least 50%, if not more, or is it less?
I would say it's less than 50%.
Okay, good.
Only because if you look at the most essential functions, they're public, they're overt, so the food supply, agriculture, uh-huh. or health. Now, I think they're being run in criminal ways. Uh-huh. So if you look at what's going on in the food supply, I think that, you know, certainly from what I know, it's being run in very, very criminal ways. Uh-huh. The one thing I would stress is if we can manage to see how this system works, we will discover one of our greatest powers, which is we're financing it. We're supporting it. We're doing it. I mean, if you look at who's implementing all of these different systems, the corruption of agriculture, the corruption of pharmaceuticals, the corruption of you name it, you know, we're the ones who are doing it, whether we're financing it with our pension funds or our retirement savings, or we're banking at the banks that are doing this, or we're paying our taxes, or, you know, so if you go through our wallets and our financial statements and balance sheets, whether it's, you know, we're going to work and getting an income from it or we're investing in it, this is us. We're doing this and we don't have to do this. And the little secret is they're destroying so much wealth, whether it's the environment, the living wealth or the family wealth. There's plenty of ways economically to turn it around.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it's basically about like cutting the greedy middleman.
No, it's not the middleman.
No, it's not the middleman, but like in general, so that you just, we do it ourselves.
The strings which we're attached to.
Yeah.
Well, here's the question. The thing that has made this system go is secrecy. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that secrecy has related to, you know, military and intelligence secrecy, the black budget, mm-hmm. and invisible technology, et cetera, et cetera. And my understanding, you know, because if you look at a lot of the people in the United States who I knew personally and worked with personally who were involved deeply in that system, these were not bad people. These were not psychopaths. These were not greedy. Now, you know, they were a different generation than the ones now. And my understanding is that on more than one occasion, they've gotten in the room and tried to figure out how could we diminish the secrecy. And they can't see a practical way to do it. One, because they're trying to protect things from, you know, the true percentage of the population, which are psychopaths. But the other is there's so many different legal liabilities built up. You know, they really believe that they're dealing with risk issues that the general population in a democracy can't deal with. Mm-hmm. Now, we may agree or disagree. And where I've always disagreed with them is if you let the people optimize the economy bottom up, you know, we're all going to, there's going to be so much more wealth in the system that we can take care of whatever you need to take care of on a secret basis. But that's where the issue comes down to, is what risks are they managing and which of those risks are legitimate and which are not legitimate?
I don't think any are. I think this is part of what a psychopath is. If you become a megalomaniac and you think you're omnipotent because you're the only one who can assess the risks, then you must be a psychopath.
Okay, so let me tell you what happened in 1995. And I'm not defending this. I'm just telling you mm-hmm. what I observed. There was a huge budget fight in the United States. And this is all described in the Dylan Reed story, so I won't go into it in detail, and I encourage you to read that. Mm-hmm. But you had a group of people who for 20 years had tried desperately to get the democratic process in the United States to come up with a financially responsible solution because they knew the boomers were going to retire in 20 and 30 years, and they had to put money inside. And if you look globally, there were very few countries that were willing to do what it took to properly fund those retirement liabilities. I'm in the Netherlands right now. The Netherlands was one of the very few who really did it. Mm-hmm. It's quite an astonishing story. Anyway, at their inability to get a budget deal caused a group of people, I believe, in the leadership of the country to decide that's it, they give up. You can't manage this system in a democratic process because the criminals will always offer more money to the people and buy them politically. And so it's impossible to achieve a financially responsible solution within a democratic process because the people will always just want more free money. And I tell this the details. Now, it was just at that moment after that happened that they started to steal all the money out of the U.S. government. So they were clearly bubbling the economy and shifting money out. They started to do the predatory lending. They started to do the student loan predatory lending. They started to do, because if you cannot achieve a financially responsible solution, then you have to lower life expectancy.
When was now, this? Was this in 60?
This was at the end of 1995, starting in 1996. Okay. Now, I met with a group of the top pension fund. I had a group of pension funded leaders on one of the boards of a subsidiary. We were doing a project with the Department of Labor. And I met with them in 1997 to present the plan we'd come up with under Community Wizard to re-optimize the economy bottom up. And the president of the largest pension fund in the country looked me in the eye and he said, my God, it's not hopeless. We can save the country. He said, you've got to get to Nick Brady, who'd been the treasury of the secretary and was my boss at Dylan Reed. And he said, you don't understand. They've given up on the country, they're moving all the money out starting in the fall. And that's exactly when what is now over $20 trillion started to go missing. That was the beginning of fiscal 1998. And so there was a clear decision, I believe, and I describe it all in Dylan Reed, whereby the leadership who had tried for 20 years to create a fiscally responsible infrastructure within the US government decided it was hopeless, they couldn't do it. And instead what they did was they stripped the government of trillions of dollars by bubbling it up with debt, which PS they've done, you know, in countries around the world. So you bubble the debt, you suck the money out, and then after you've gotten the assets out, you turn around and the governments are full of liabilities. And those liabilities are basically promises to pay retirement, promises to pay healthcare, but you don't have, the assets are gone because you've had a financial coup. Mm. And now the question is, how do you consolidate? Mm. And if you look at what I call the magic virus, you know, the magic virus is telling the story, oh, we don't have enough money for healthcare because of the magic virus. We don't have enough money for the retirement savings because of the magic virus. But in fact, this is nothing more, you know, now that you've taken that money, now you have to basically inform people that there's, you know, you took the money and now there's no money for nursing homes, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And so how are you going to deal with that politically? And what we're watching is their method of dealing with the politics that they've stolen the money. Now, the reason I'm interested in what are we going to do about our taxes, because I believe the legal mechanisms exist to get that money back. And maybe not in cash form, but maybe only in equity ownership of the assets created from it. Mm-hmm. But that's where we are, because they've basically, you know, they've stolen the assets, and now what's left in the governments are liabilities, and those governments are printing more debt as fast as they can, and that's what gives the central bankers control.
Is there concrete evidence for this? I mean, for this stealing the assets because people began to realize, or they didn't realize, but they thought it's impossible to take care of the budget as far as the pension funds, et cetera, are concerned. And then they decided to bubble up the economy, student loans, for example, thereby taking the assets away, and now we're left out there standing in the rain without any assets left. Do you have concrete evidence for that?
So I would suggest, so what I've done with the Dylan Reed story, and then we've done another website called missingmoney.solari.com. I'll put mm-hmm. the link up here. Mm-hmm. So let me just do a screen share and I'll go to Missing Money. So I've been tracking since 1998 the money going missing from the federal government, and this is just U.S.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but the same thing happened all over the world.
Probably.
Oh, here, from what I know that.
Well, I know money, an extraordinary amount of money has gone missing from NATO. Mm-hmm. So I know that. Oh, wait a minute. Stop. Ah. Okay, can you see that?
It's coming up. Yeah, there it is.
Okay, so I started tracking the missing money in 1998. And then what we did, so you see all these years, mm-hmm. these are links to the documentation from two of the agencies that were missing $21 trillion as of 2015. More has been reported since, and we're in the process of doing an update. And I was doing a radio show about the $6.5 trillion that went missing in 2015. And a wonderful professor from Michigan State University heard me and thought, well, she must be wrong. And he called me. His name is Dr. Mark Skidmore. And he called me and said, oh, my God, I've checked the Department of Defense documentation, and it turns out you're right. What can I do to help? And so we agreed he and his students would do a complete survey, which is what this represents. I had it up to $12 trillion missing. He found another $9 trillion. So we have it to $21
trillion.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you go to this website, what you'll see is lots of his documentation. I've written an article called For Institutional Investors that describe what this means, mm-hmm. Called Caveat Emptor, mm-hmm. What investors need to do due diligence on Treasury. Mm-hmm. But then what we've also done is if you go to this section on financial laws, what we've done is we've laid out all the financial management laws and monetary. If you look at all the legal structure in the United States to run both the fiscal infrastructure and the monetary infrastructure, what I had is I had two of my attorneys write out all of the different laws and infrastructure because clearly they're operating outside the law. The big change was in October 2018. The White House and the Congress agreed bipartisan during the Kavanaugh hearings to implement something, an administrative policy called Federal Accounting Standards Advisory Board Statement 56, which basically says all government agencies and related entities can keep secret books and not report any of the money. And this moves it to a completely out of control system.
So can you, because that just came up again in my mind, you're saying there was no crash in September of 2019. It was a takedown. What exactly happened?
Yes. So here's, because this is complex, if you look at sort of what they did and how they did, and it's important to look at the chronologies.
Okay, give me a second. Let me first translate everything because I think some of us are left behind and we want no one left behind. Also, sie hat darüber berichtet, wie die Privatbanken, wie die Federal Bank, die Privaten gehört, also die Bundesbank sozusagen, die amerikanische gehört Privaten. Bei uns übrigens ist die Bankenaufsicht, die wird bezahlt von den Banken, deswegen funktioniert ja auch nichts. Sie sagt, wir werden von denen ausgesaugt und zwar indem wir die mit unseren Steuern bezahlen, diese privaten Leute. Das Ganze ist ein rechtliches Problem. Wir müssen dafür sorgen, dass wir rechtlich die Kontrolle über unsere Steuern zurückbekommen und dann werden wir merken, dass wir die Leute, die da oben sitzen und uns aussaugen, nicht benötigen. Das Problem ist, was sie schildert, die Leute, die uns ausplündern, sind, die sagen sich nicht, wie kommen wir nach Rom, sondern die sagen sich, wie kriegen wir die Leute dazu, dass den Weg für uns nach Rom zu pflastern, indem die schlauesten, intelligentesten Leute, die eigentlich auch was viel Besseres tun könnten, letzten Endes die Infrastruktur, die elektronische zum Beispiel, Infrastruktur für diese Leute bauen und gar nicht merken, dass sie damit ihr eigenes, in Anführungsstrichen, Todesurteil unterschreiben. Sie macht es deutlich an einem Beispiel, dieses Aussaugen, was hier im Moment läuft, an einem Beispiel, sagt, wir brauchen nicht nur die Rule of Law in general, also den Rechtsstaat im Allgemeinen, sondern wir sollten uns auch die Wucherrechte, die Wuchergesetze angucken, Usury Laws. Zum Beispiel können die privaten Banken für 1% Geld generieren oder herstellen oder zur Verfügung stellen. Die Leute, die aber mit den Kreditkarten unterwegs sind, das sind in den USA viel mehr als hier, die bezahlen auf ihre Kreditkartenschulden, wohlgemerkt 1% bezahlen die einen und die bezahlen 16-17%. Wir haben es ja also wohl mit auf der anderen Seite wohl, weist sie nochmal drauf hin, überwiegend mit Psychopathen zu tun. Und jetzt sind wir an dem Punkt, sie hat festgestellt, dass hier Riesensummen gestohlen worden sind aus dem amerikanischen System. Und zwar hat man 95 offenbar die Entscheidung getroffen in den USA, oh mein Gott, die ganze Altersvorsorge, das kriegen wir gar nicht mehr hin und Gesundheitsvorsorge, das schaffen wir sowieso nicht mehr. Das System ist kaputt und hat dann Geld insgesamt, hat sie in Zusammenarbeit mit jemandem, der ihre Thesen erkannt hat, als richtig erkannt hat, rausgefunden, insgesamt 21 Billionen Dollar aus dem System geklaut. Sie sagt, das gibt es auch in anderen Gegenden, in anderen Ländern, das gibt es auch bei der NATO, ist auch sehr viel Geld verschwunden. Dieses Geld ist irgendwo geblieben, vermutlich da, wo es jetzt benutzt wird, um die Strukturen aufzubauen, die man braucht, um das System zu perfektionieren. Und dann habe ich nochmal gefragt, was ist denn nun eigentlich tatsächlich im September 2019 passiert? Sie sagt, es war kein Crash, sondern es war ein Takedown. Okay, here we are. September of 2019, what exactly happened there?
Okay, so I just realized that, wait a minute. We're going over my next appointment, so I'm going to tell them I'm late.
It's all right. I want to keep you. This is so much, and it's a horror story. But on the other hand, there is light at the end of the tunnel, I gather.
Yes, yes, yes. Of course, there's always light at the end of the
great,
tunnel.
Great, great.
Okay. Oh God, that's terribly rude. Okay. Sorry, your question again was?
What exactly happened in September of 2019? You're saying it's not a crash, it's a takedown. It's a deliberate
right.
takedown.
Mm-hmm. The Fed went into the repo market and started to essentially increase their balance sheet with a form of quantitative easing that put money into a variety of different hands. My guess is it, you know, essentially positioned to do what the disaster capitalists are doing. And then of course we had a big stock market crash, in the first quarter of 2020, right after an unprecedented number of sort of tech billionaires and the CEOs got their money out. And of course, when it crashes in the equity markets, when you drop 35%, that's the line, the technical line to begin a bear market. It dropped 35% and then came back. A fantastic buying opportunity if you knew what was going on. And that is, of course, when, as the economy started to basically react to the takedown, we had the pandemic that then permitted the shutdown of Main Street. Mm-hmm. And so what you did at that point, as you're putting massive amounts of money into the big banks and institutional investors, you then shut down all of the independent producers in Main Street. So, and that gives you the ability, of course, to not only consolidate their market share into your businesses, but it gives you the ability to start picking up businesses and real estate cheap. What's very interesting is if you look at the government offered small businesses these loans to keep their payroll going. Mm-hmm. But the deal was they had to turn over a massive amount of financial data. Mm-hmm. And that financial data would have put a variety of players in position to then figure out how to engineer a shift in market share to them. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So like this...
Soll ich es eben übersetzen?
Okay, so I have a question like with regards to this, the takedown, as you call it, in September 2019. So because I read that there were rumors that whatever Morgan Stanley or something, that they got into trouble. But do you think that's not true? It was not the question of that there would be like a lack of confidence, basically, or trust in the market, that it was an engineered thing, that's what you say, not just that one bank got, that's why the repo market where people lend out money overnight, like between interbanking business.
So the highly centralized, highly leveraged financial system always has problems like that. Mm-hmm. And if you look at how the system is run, those problems, as long as the leadership coordinates well, don't ever have to turn into a problem, particularly because you can print as much as you can need. So my guess is that there was no real problem, not to say that there aren't hiccups and problems in a highly leveraged system. I think this was clearly a takedown. Uh-huh. And if you, what I would strongly recommend is that if you're interested in this aspect, that you watch the interview that I did with John Titus on the Saleri Report on the Going Direct Reset, and you read not only his write-up on the Going Direct Reset, which is on the related web presentation, but you then read State of Our Currencies, which I published in October, right before then. Mm-hmm. So if you read State of Our Currencies and the Going Direct Reset, I put the links to both of them in the chat. Mm-hmm. And they all have chronologies with it. And it's, you know, when you talk about reengineering the financial system at that point, you're talking about something that touches all the money on the planet. So in one sense, we can talk about it conceptually as to make it simple, but it's really complex. Mm-hmm. Of course. So I strongly recommend you read that. And I think what we all need is we need a way for non-financial people to be able to understand exactly what they're doing and what's happening. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to get science and medicine and finance to all be able to understand what each other's saying.
And that's, you know, in that context, I also found interesting that, like, in September 19, they put, I think it was like around $170 billion into this repo market. And then during the epidemic, or like when the epidemic started, they received, so the banks in total, I think at that point received, or like in maybe it was March or so, like $2,000 billion. So basically, and at the same time, they eliminated, you know, the amount of money that the banks, or the percentage of money that banks had to deposit when they wanted to give out loans. So basically, they then sat on these like super filled, basically like treasure boxes, or what was that, Schatztruhe?
Right.
Coffers.
Well, it was very interesting because for many years, every year, all the investment advisors that I'm part of say they can't possibly keep the U.S. stock market outperforming the rest of the world for another year. They can't do that. If you look at the fundamental economic performance in Europe and in the emerging markets or in Asia, you know, the U.S. stock market can't outperform again this year. And so every year it's been another miracle that saved the American stock market. And then coming into 2020, we all said, that's it. You know, and a lot of investment advisors told me they were shifting allocations to Asia and to Europe. And then bam, the pandemic happens, the dollar's flying, the treasury market's flying, and the US stock market outperforms all the markets. It was quite, here we go again. Mm-hmm.
By very drastic measures, however.
That, you know, what I think the people who, you know, one of the best commentators on everything that's happened for the last 2 to 4 years is C.J. Hopkins, who's in Berlin. He's right there. Do you know him?
No.
Does anybody know him?
No.
C.J. Hopkins was a very successful playwright who got so frustrated about what happened to Bernie Sanders, he started to write essays about politics. And if you look at that, our injection fraud, where you're the hero, he's also in there as one of the best sources. He wrote an article called The COVIDian Cult. Mm-hmm. And what he describes in his essays is how literally a group of people declared war on populism. So starting in 2016. And I think you've seen a group of people, certainly in the United States, the people responsible for the dollar syndicate, which is much bigger than the United States, but they started a process in 2016 to destroy the independent producer and their role financing democratic activities and expressing a democratic democratic impulse. And they think that COVID-19 has done a fabulous job of putting them back in power, and they're very pleased and happy with it. And if you look at their balance sheets, they've made a fortune. So this has been, from their point of view, politically and economically, a fantastically profitable and successful process. And they are very happy with it, and they are extremely proud of what they've done. And they're doubling down on the tactic.
Who are these people?
So, you know, my nickname for the group at the top is Mr. Global.
Yeah.
And basically the top layer is the owners of the central bank. The mystery, of course, is how does it all work? But I would say part of our problem in the United States is we have a very expensive middle management. So if you look at the people, if you take the top 100 people that you know who you would associate with running the Democratic Party in the United States, and sort of the people who support them in the House and Senate, most of which are Democrats, but there are plenty of Republicans, they are a political class. And I would say to a person, they're very pleased with what FASB 56 has done and what the, you know, sort of COVID-19 has done to consolidate their global power. There's another article I would recommend that Lee Smith just wrote called The 30 Tyrants, where he talks about how Athens used Sparta to kind of keep control by using a foreign power to attack their people. And Smith is positing the same thing with respect to China and the United States. And it's very well done and makes some very important points, because much of how America kept the false prosperity going was to sort of basically team up with China. China bought treasuries, then the treasuries went down to Walmart and bought Chinese goods, and around we go. And he's just talking about how that relates to the current election. Anyway, so you just have to understand that what we think is a very negative turn in events to the people who are implementing this, this has been phenomenally successful. And from everything I see, they're very pleased, whether it's the central bankers or the political class that's just sort of engineered the recent elections.
Okay. Gut, also wir haben eben nochmal nachgefragt, was war denn nun tatsächlich im September 2019? Was ist ja hier bei einigen Leuten angekommen wie ein Crash? So ganz klar war es nicht. Sie sagt, nee, das war eine inszenierte Geschichte. Das war ein bewusstes Ausschalten der Geldzufuhr. Dieser Repo-Markt, das ist der Markt, in dem sich Banken gegenseitig Geld leihen. Wir haben gedacht, der ist zusammengebrochen, weil, wie du gerade gesagt hast, eine der Banken in Schwierigkeiten geraten ist. Wir haben auch gedacht, die Deutsche Bank könnte es gewesen sein, weil die ja eine Weile als gefährlichste Bank der Welt galt. Sie sagt, nee, nach ihren Ermittlungen ist das Absicht gewesen, um genau das zu inszenieren, was wir dann ein Vierteljahr oder ein halbes Jahr später gesehen haben, nämlich die Folgen dieses ausbleibenden Vertrauens innerhalb der Banken waren dann im März zu sehen, als dann tatsächlich der Lockdown inszeniert wurde, wohl als Teil dieser Strategie. Kurz vorher noch, im ersten Quartal, gab es einen Börsencrash, und zwar um 35%. Man sagt, bei 35%, da ist es immer richtig ernst. Aber kurz bevor der Crash wiederum kam, das hat sich alles analysiert, haben die Top-Leute aus den großen Konzernen Aktien verkauft, ohne Ende. Die sind also von dem Crash nicht betroffen gewesen, die haben kurz vorher verkauft. Dann kam der Crash, dann sind sie wieder eingestiegen, weil innerhalb, auf mirakulöse Art und Weise, innerhalb kürzester Zeit sind die 35% Crash wieder in die Höhe gegangen. Und nun hat sie eben erklärt, wie kann das eigentlich sein, dass der amerikanische Börsenmarkt, der völlig losgelöst ist von der Realwirtschaft, der nichts mehr mit der Realwirtschaft zu tun hat, dass er immer wieder jedes Jahr alle anderen Börsenmärkte, Deutschland, Europa weit, alle anderen Börsenmärkte outperformed hat. Alle haben gesagt, oh Scheiß, diesmal geht's aber nicht mehr gut. Es ging immer wieder gut. Und besonders im letzten Jahr ging es gut. Eine entscheidende, sie sagt, das sind die Central Banker, die Privatleute, die dahinter sind. Sie nennt diese ganze Gruppe Mr. Global. Das sind aber nicht nur die Central Banker, die Privatleute, denen die Central Banks gehören, sondern es sind eben auch die Politiker, die dabei mitspielen. Und sie sagte, eine entscheidende Entwicklung war diejenige, dass die Amerikaner mit den Chinesen zusammengearbeitet haben. Denn der scheinbare Reichtum, die scheinbar boomende Wirtschaft war erkauft. Und zwar dadurch, dass die Chinesen amerikanische Anleihen gekauft haben ohne Ende und damit natürlich auch die USA in der Hand hatten, weil die Chinesen deren Scheinwohlstand finanziert haben. Sie sagt, darin sieht man vielleicht auch eine Erklärung dafür, wie die Wahl letztes Jahr ausgegangen ist. Es ist ja dann eben nicht der Mann, der China zur Rechenschaft ziehen wollte, nämlich Trump, wieder gewählt worden, jedenfalls nach der öffentlichen Meinung nicht, sondern es ist jemand anders gewählt worden, der sehr gute chinesische Kontakte hat. That explains part of how the election went, right? The control that China has because it owns much of the U.S. debt, right?
No, I don't think China has significant power over the U.S.
Uh-huh.
Now, clearly, they have significant economic clout globally.
Yeah.
But I don't, China is basically a creation of the G7.
Uh-huh.
A successful China is. And so it's a much more complex story. But what you have is you have a situation where you have two groups of oligarchs scratching each other's back. So here's my suggestion. If you are interested, what I would say is the people who are interested, read State of Our Currency. I'll send you hard copies.
Mm-hmm.
Take a look at the video and the written presentation on Going Direct. Those are the best descriptions I know of what is happening in the central banking system.
Mm-hmm.
And then we do this again after you've had a chance to go through the material.
Sounds good to me.
Good.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because this is a lot of information. But
yes.
Let me just very quickly clarify, because I just made a mistake. Also sie sagt, nein, das sind nicht die Chinesen, die die ganze Macht haben, sondern es sind zwei unterschiedliche Gruppierungen von Oligarchen, die sich gegenseitig bedienen, aber die Chinesen, also die Macht in den USA haben, aber die Chinesen haben natürlich weltweit sehr viel Einfluss, sind aber die chinesische Macht, solange die funktioniert, die wirtschaftliche Macht, sind Kreationen der G7, sagt sie, also der entwickelten Länder. Es scheint sehr, 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 sehr kompliziert zu sein. Die Story insgesamt scheint mir Sinn zu machen, aber das müssen wir uns genauer angucken.
Okay, let me ask one final question. So if we follow your train of thought now, and you said that it's, they're basically like happy how it has evolved, the whole project, let's call it. Would you think that there's something that they have not taken into account? Like, for instance, I mean, you said that it's a lot about like secrecy, that it's not out there. And what we see now as like a global movement is that a lot of people are looking much more, into the details. I mean, so both on the scientific side, but also like now on this financial side. And do you think that's going to be of some sort of, so you're going to pose some sort of threat to them, to the whole scheme, let's call it?
That's an excellent question. And when in our wrap up the injection fraud, our first section is what we call the heroes. And we put together a list of all these many doctors, scientists, attorneys, researchers, journalists who absolutely extended themselves to get to the facts of what was going on and how to protect people, whether it was protect their money or protect their health. And I hadn't realized it until I put the section together. I was blown away by what this group of people had accomplished. It was amazing. And I think these guys had no idea, especially that the medical community would share and collaborate and communicate in high speed and figure out how to protect people in the way that they did. And I think it really backed them up
mm-hmm.
because the shared intelligence of this global group of these people and many more like them was so fearless, so courageous, so intelligent, because when we operate together, we're so smart, in this kind of open shared intelligence. And I think that backed on the medical side, I think this backed it up tremendously and stopped a lot of the fear from accomplishing what they wanted.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they've been very frustrated. The other thing is, if you look at what they're trying to do with the injections, this is prototyping. This is experimentation. And it's very, very messy. And I think they're running into far more obstacles than they were hoping. And so That's why I think this thing of shared intelligence and what you're doing is so important, because it's like a jigsaw puzzle, both what's going on and then what we do about it. So we all have to keep putting down our pieces and trying things. Mm-hmm. And I just think we can figure it out and we can shift it in a positive direction, particularly because if you look at what they're trying to do, I think they're going to fail. It's so hard. It's so complicated. And it's so contradictory to life. And you have so many people in the leadership in that group who, frankly, are suffering. You know, people who win in a rigged game get stupid. Mm-hmm. And they are suffering from being in their own bell jar. So to me, that's why we have a great opportunity. And because I'm an investment banker, I just have to do this. So everybody listening, do they know how to support you? Because I think what you're doing is so great and so important.
Yeah, we're really lucky because a lot of people seem to think that we're doing something good and they are supporting us. Of course, it's important. Because without donations, we couldn't survive. I mean, none of us lives off of the donations. We're lawyers. But right. We need to finance some of the lawsuits for people who can't who can't pay for them. So
let me make a suggestion. We have a Take Action crowdfund. It's Larry. Mm-hmm. So could you send me the information I need to put you up on the Take Action crowdfund?
Well, that's
and
great.
And say, go support these people. And I would just say, if this has been useful for everybody listening,
it is.
How do they support you? How do they make donations?
We have a bank account and they can transfer. They're money transfers. That's what they usually do here in Europe.
I know. Do they know how to do that? Do they have a link?
Yeah, they do. There's a link. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm an investment banker. I have to do that.
Yeah. Okay. Well, this is incredible.
Thank you. Thank you for the opportunity to meet with you. I wish I could drive. You know, it's not that far away. I wish I could drive. Are you in Berlin? Where are you?
We're in Berlin, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so I wish I could drive down to Berlin and see you and see Jay Hopkins and
we're going to have another meeting. This is so interesting and this is so much information. We're going to have to take a closer look at some more of the details. So we'll just if it's okay with you, we'll just try and get together again.
Let's do it.
Okay, great.
Have a great day.
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, you too. Thank you very much. Have a great weekend. So, dann können wir ein Wrap-up machen. Das hier, Wolfgang, habe ich nicht erwartet, muss ich sagen. Das war ein bisschen mehr, als ich eigentlich wissen wollte.
Ja, ich glaube, ganz entscheidend. Ich habe Sie ja gerade zum Schluss noch mal gefragt, ob Sie denn denkt, dass das... Ja, also ob das jetzt tatsächlich, weil Sie meinte ja, es geht so, also es läuft gut sozusagen, wenn man das als richtig unterstellt, wir werden das natürlich alles uns noch mal mit den ganzen Unterlagen und so weiter auseinandersetzen, was sie sagt, dass das eben eigentlich nach Plan läuft sozusagen auf der Business-Seite, was da alles jetzt so durch die gefüllten Kassen und die Möglichkeit, da möglicherweise Sachen aufzukaufen und so weiter, dass das jetzt nach ihrer Theorie sozusagen da plangerecht ist. Und dann hatte ich gefragt, ob sie denn denkt, dass da vielleicht auch durch die ganzen, weil sie auch an einem Punkt meinte, es geht halt auch viel um Geheimniskrämerei, also dass das eben, wenn das natürlich jetzt bekannt würde, was da alles so abgeht, dass das halt doch nicht nicht so gerade auf Begeisterung stoßen würde. Und da habe ich gefragt, ob sie das Gefühl hat, dass eben dadurch, dass ja jetzt weltweit, also wir sind Teil dieses Aufklärungsprozesses oder dieses investigativen Prozesses, ob da eben da vielleicht doch ein bisschen Sand ins Getriebe kommen könnte, weil eben die Leute doch einfach jetzt mehr zutage kommt, als man sich da vielleicht wünscht. Wie gesagt, jetzt die Richtigkeit ihrer Angaben unterstellt. Und da meinte sie, da sei sie ganz beeindruckt. Also wie viele Menschen, die sie auf ihrer Webseite da auch zusammengestellt hat in der Übersicht, wie viele Menschen und Gruppen da jetzt im Moment aktiv sind und wie viele auch gerade auf wissenschaftlicher und juristischer Ebene und so weiter sich ständig austauschen und dass das eben eine ganz tolle Gruppenintelligenz ist sozusagen, die da zum Tragen kommt und dass die doch eben Sand ins Getriebe zu werfen vermag. Und was sie auch zusätzlich meint, dass zum Beispiel diese Geschichte jetzt mit der Impfung, was wir auch hier mehrfach besprochen haben, dass die halt auch doch mehr Probleme macht, als das vielleicht jetzt so gedacht war und dadurch halt jetzt auch ein bisschen mehr, ja vielleicht will man sagen, Impfzögerlichkeit eventuell aufkommt und dadurch das Ganze eben nicht mehr so ganz nach Plan läuft.
Die schwimmen in ihrer eigenen Suppe, hat sie gesagt, und damit wird man dumm. Aber es ist tatsächlich so, dass die Leute, die hier international, so wie wir das jetzt machen, wie mit ihr gemacht haben oder mit anderen Leuten, die wir hier gehört haben, wir haben tatsächlich, so wie du sagst, Sand ins Getriebe geworfen. Deswegen haben wir die schon mal ein bisschen verlangsamt. Aber die haben sich auch selbst ein Bein gestellt mit ihren Impfungen, weil das machen viele Leute nicht mit. Wir kriegen ja ständig neue Meldungen rein von den Impfschäden. Das kann man nicht alles verheimlichen. Da kann man nicht jedes Mal erzählen, nö, das war irgendwie Altersschwäche, während vorher alles Covid war. Ja?
Das wissen die und deshalb schwenken die jetzt um auf einen anderen Impfstoff.
Ja.
Ja, ja, genau.
Ja, neues Spiel, neues Glück.
Ja,
ja, genau. Die, denn, und die wollten ja auch auf einen anderen Erreger umschwenken, die sogenannten Mutanten. Das haben sie auch schon versucht. Mhm. Weil sie mit dem PCR-Test nicht weiterkamen, schwenken sie um auf Sequenzierung. Mhm. Also die versuchen, dann ist egal, ob was da dran ist. Die suchen irgendeine neue Story, machen eine neue Story und gewinnen damit wieder Zeit. Das ist ja das, was dahinter steht.
Ja. Ja.
Tja. Na gut, also ich glaube, jetzt sind wir erstmal am Ende dieser Sitzung. Das war ja wieder Wahnsinn, dass wir da das irgendwie, also auf jeden Fall insbesondere auch an Nacharbeitungsaufgaben, dass wir das uns alle mal ganz genau angucken. Wir werden dazu auch dann einiges veröffentlichen, wenn sich die Dinge so tatsächlich darstellen und auch allen den Zuschauern Gelegenheit geben, eben sich selber mit den Sachen auseinanderzusetzen. Ja, also ich glaube, über Spenden hatten wir jetzt gerade schon, kann ich mir eigentlich fast sparen. Sie hatte das nochmal angesprochen, sie... genau, also
wir schicken unsere Daten auch zu ihr und dann wird sie das in den USA auch verbreiten. Wir haben das schon oft gehört, dass Amerikaner, mit denen wir gesprochen haben, gesagt haben, wie können wir euch unterstützen? Und es ist natürlich wirklich, wirklich, wirklich äußerst hilfreich, weil wir damit, die Klagen sind ja nicht billig. Wenn wir hier einen hohen Streitwert haben, dann kostet das schon ein paar Tausend pro Stück. Oder aber wenn wir jetzt, das müssen wir auch noch machen.
Wir finanzieren damit ja auch andere Sachen, zum Beispiel IT und
IT, aber jetzt auch wahrscheinlich müssen wir auch mal gucken, dass wir den armen Sören da ein bisschen aus der Falle holen. Aber das machen wir beim nächsten Mal mit dem eigenen Spendenaufruf, denke ich.
Ja, und Oval Media freut sich natürlich auch über Spenden. Die unterstützen uns ja hier mit der mit den Aufzeichnungen, mit der ganzen Kamera-Aktivitäten sozusagen, begleiten uns da. Ja, vielen Dank da auch nochmal hin. Und wir sagen dann, glaube ich, einfach tschüss und bis zum nächsten Mal.
Ja, schönes Wochenende.
Schönes Wochenende.
Vielen Dank auch an Wolfgang Roder.
Ja, danke Wolfgang. Wir sprechen am Wochenende. Okay.
Tschüss.
Tschüss.